This is In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle.
So, Rochelle, we think we might have a Christmas present for everybody in today's show, right?
I would think so, because I think this person has touched, almost literally physically touched, so many constituents that they may feel that they know him as well as we do.
And we're talking, of course, of Mayor Mike Duggan, Detroit mayor. And you know what's interesting about him, Rochelle? I don't know that you can go anywhere in the state and run into a person who doesn't know who he is. He's had that effect on people.
I have run into that. I have seen that. It's unusual. But the best thing, it's always about something good.
In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle is sponsored by the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health.
So as promised, we wanted to give our listeners a great Christmas present, an uninterrupted chat with the mayor of the city of Detroit, Mayor Mike Duggan. Welcome, Mayor Mike Duggan, to In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you. So Michael Edward Duggan, American attorney, prosecutor, businessman, and now mayor. You have done so much in this, first term. And I guess the question is, did you plan to do it all? I mean, is there anything that you're not going to do as you've now, dealt with transportation and with the lights? And what's off limits? Anything?
Well, in fact, we had a cabinet meeting this week to talk about exactly that. The first 2 years, we had to get the streetlights on. We had to get the buses running. We had to get the grass cut in the parks. We had to get the ambulances to show up. I think we've made significant progress on many of those fronts. Now we're talking about what do we do the next 2 years and getting the violence under control and focusing on making sure this recovery includes everybody in the city is going to be what we spend the next 2 years doing.
Well, we want to talk about all of those things. Mayor Duggan, just to piggyback on Rochelle's question, I remember a speech you gave, I believe it was at the Econ Club, not long after you took office, where you described in great detail about going out the first day in office, and they were plowing the streets of snow. We got that big snow. And
right.
You talked about, the guy who got the little piece of paper and, okay, here's where I go. And now I got to go plow this street and come back. Now, of course, we haven't had a bad winter so far. Has anything there changed? Let's talk about that just very quickly, very specifically. Has that system changed?
Oh, it's changed dramatically. That was January 1st of 2014. It was my very first day in office. It was New Year's Day that I went and jumped on the snowplow, and I learned a lot about city government in the course of that afternoon. But now the plows all have GPS systems in them. We actually know where they are, which is the standard practice in other places. And have a number of pieces of new equipment. We'll see. We haven't seen any sign of snow in a while. But
don't say that.
I believe that we are much better prepared, but there's no doubt that we're better. The other thing is we did this app that's called Improve Detroit that many Detroiters have on their phones, where you can report problems with city services.
Right.
And one of the problems we had in 2013 is when we get more than 6 inches of snow in the neighborhoods, we bring in private contractors to do neighborhood streets, and they tell us they're done. And then we say they're done, and we get all kinds of angry phone calls that says, my street is missed. And so we're now going to have an app that the point at which the contractor says all the streets are done, they can immediately text us what's not done, and we can actually have the citizens direct the plows back onto the streets. So at some point this winter we're going to be tested, but I think we're in much better shape than we were 2 years ago.
Well, Mayor, I can tell you that I have driven around and seen the development myself, and the difference in what Detroit looks like from, the year 2000 to the year 2015 is stunning. But what you heard from a lot of people is, well, we're small businesses, and in a lot of instances we couldn't get capital, and so now, they've got people coming in with big bucks and buying buildings, and they can't afford to stay, or they're worried about their shops, and you jumped right in on small business. Can you talk a little bit about what you're doing for entrepreneurs and small business owners?
Well, this was, a great week. We had one day where I went to the opening of a wine shop on Woodward. That's the first venture of three African-American women led by Regina Gaines, opening a business in downtown Detroit. And it was backed by a number of sources of funds, including something we lined up from J.P. Morgan Chase, which is an Entrepreneurs of Color fund with $6.5 million of loans for entrepreneurs of color, people who might not otherwise have access to it. So I went from the ribbon cutting on their wine shop, got in the car, and drove out to Schaefer and the Linden area, where a 40,000 square foot Imperial grocery store, as big and beautiful a store as you will see anywhere in the suburbs, over in the Fenkel and Schaefer area, which is the kind of neighborhood that we need to rebuild. And again, through some financing it might not have been available a couple of years ago, and we're providing the kind of shopping in the neighborhoods that people want. And probably our signature program is the Motor City Match program. And if any of your listeners are aspiring entrepreneurs, you can go on to MotorCityMatch.com right now. But every single quarter, the foundations give out $500,000 in grants to new business startup. It basically 10 grants every 90 days for new businesses. And so I want people in this town who grow up, who've got the talent, who've got the drive to start their own businesses, but maybe thought somebody like me could never get financing. Motor City Match is a way that Detroiters can do it. And the first 10 businesses that were awarded last quarter were all to Detroiters. And so we got Detroiters filling in vacant storefronts, starting businesses in Detroit.
You're listening to Marie and me talk with Mayor Mike Duggan. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle. Here's Marie Osborne.
Mayor, you are talking, of course, about the great development that is going on in a lot of spots in the city of Detroit, primarily, of course, in the downtown area, midtown area. Let's talk a little bit about some of our neighborhoods. Wallet Hub just came out with a report this past week that compared the 150 most populated U.S. cities. They used 16 metrics on this, but basically Detroit had the highest child and adult poverty rates, highest percentage of homes with incomplete plumbing in the home, as well as some other issues, and all centered, of course, around poverty. The issues within the neighborhood seem to persist. Are we going to see in this coming year some changes in terms of how you operate within our neighborhoods and the policies within neighborhoods in the city of Detroit?
Well, you've got two separate questions there. I think the conditions in many neighborhoods have changed dramatically. In the areas where we've done the 7,000 demolitions, Skillman Foundation just did a report that in those neighborhoods, property values have gone up $400 million in 1 year. We've got a dozen neighborhoods in this city where the houses are selling today 25% or more than they were a year ago. Now, they're the areas that you would expect. They're the Sherwood Forest, and they're the Rosedale
Park,
and Boston Edison's and East English Villages, et cetera. But they have a dozen neighborhoods selling at 25% more than a year ago. We're making progress. The second question is the poverty question. There's no question about it. We have a higher percentage of our residents living in poverty than any city in the country. It's a big part of why I ran. But you look at the number of businesses and jobs coming into this city. We land Sakdi Automotive, a 650 employee part manufacturer at the site of the old Southwestern High School. You look at the more than 1,000 people working right now on the hockey arena site, more than half of them City of Detroit residents. And the numbers I looked at last month, the unemployment rate in the city has gone down from 19% 2 years ago to 13% today. Now, the state unemployment rate is still 5%, so there's no question that we're higher, but we're bringing more jobs and more opportunities into the city. And at the end of the day, the only solution to poverty is jobs, and we're just going to keep grinding away at getting every business in here that we can.
Now, Mr. Mayor, I want to ask one follow about the demolitions, because there were two stories that sort of balanced each other out. You had a company that helped the Land Bank Authority pick demolition contractors, but they got charged with a felony for falsifying bills.
Now, let's be clear on that. That was the state that hired that contractor.
Right. The state hired contractor for the Detroit Land Bank. So,
right.
But they caught him, and Bill Schuette, the AG, says
right.
that there's not going to be any more criminal activity in the city
right.
of Detroit, which I've heard you say. At the same time, though, you got this federal spending bill announcement that's going to bring in $130 million to Detroit to tear down thousands of blighted buildings.
This bill is amazing. We've got the money now for two more years of demolition in the city, and we were going to be out of funds in April. So we've taken down 7,000 houses in 18 months. It's a rate four or five times faster than any city in America is demolishing homes, and we were going to be out of money in April. Now we've got the funding for two more years. And Debbie Stabenow was just relentless in pushing this bill. It was the success of the Detroit program that pushed it nationally. Dan Gilbert made 100 phone calls, emails, and texts. We got Jamie Dimon to the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase to make personal calls to Republican leaders on behalf of Detroit. And in the middle of the whole government shutdown bill, there is now $2 billion more in demolition funding nationally, and I think you're going to see Detroit get a large share of it, which is going to mean that we are going to continue to transform the landscape of the city for the next 2 years, and it's very exciting.
When the development or when the demolition is over, though, Mr. Mayor, what is your when you look 10 years down the line in your mind, you looked at 10 years down the line after that demolition is done. What do you want to see happen in those neighborhoods? Green,
well,
total green space?
You don't have to look 10 years. It's happening every day. So
okay.
We're filing lawsuits to take title to the vacant houses in the neighborhoods where we're demolishing. And so what will happen is this. You'll have two solid brick homes that are vacant, and you'll have two burned-out houses. We're demolishing the two burned-out houses. We're selling the vacant lot to the neighbor for $100, and they're putting gardens and slides in. But then we're taking the two solid brick homes, and we're auctioning them every day on buildingdetroit.com. People are buying these houses and moving in. So if you knock down the ones you can't save, people will move in to the other houses. That's why I say we've got a dozen neighborhoods where the property values have grown 25% just in the last year because we're doing it every day. And so up until now, we've taken neighborhoods that are 80% or more occupied because the federal government has said you can only demolish in targeted areas. And so if your neighborhood had four out of five houses occupied, we've been in there. With this next wave of federal money, we'll go down to neighborhoods that are 70% occupied, 60% occupied. We're going to dramatically roll this demolition program across the city. But for every house we demolish, we're also taking houses that are vacant and getting them fixed up and moving people in.
Now, Mr. Mayor, you have targeted certain areas because there are people living there and they are neighborhoods that, for obvious reasons, look like they can thrive with the right help and bringing in people. What about those places that are not on the list that you've made clear that the city mm-hmm. just can't afford to be everywhere? How are you going to sort of balance that idea of trying to build up and bring in new population with some of these neighborhoods that, quite frankly, may be three or four streets wide with one house or two houses?
Yeah, I don't know that we're going to do something that has one or two houses very soon, but mm-hmm. we're going to be very shortly into the neighborhoods that may have 10 or 12 occupied houses. And so what we've done is this. I've done lots of community meetings, as you know, Rochelle, with 300 people, mm-hmm. and we're just honest with people. We say, here are the boundaries. If you're in the less populated areas, we're still putting streetlights on. We're still cutting the grass in parks. The ambulances are still showing up, but we don't have demolition money for your area. Many of these neighborhood groups have come to us and said, okay, we want to board up these houses and secure them until you can get into our area. And so we have been supplying plywood every weekend to community groups mm-hmm. who are boarding up the homes to get them secure until we get the extra federal money to move into their area. And with this week's commitment by the federal government, those people who have been boarding up the homes and hanging in there, we're going to get to in the next year or two.
Okay.
And, Mayor, we'd like to turn the conversation a bit to education, if we can. This week, my colleague here, Rochelle Riley, wrote a great column in the Free Press about Kenyetta Wilborn Snap, indicted on bribery and several other charges. Here was this rising star in the DPS who now finds finds herself on the other side of the law in disgrace. There's just a big mess within the DPS. I mean, I know they've had union problems, leadership problems within the union, within the DPS, with the teachers, still student reading issues. I mean, overall, where do you want to take the schools in the coming year?
Well, the mayor isn't responsible for the schools.
We understand. We do understand.
So when you see, you say, where do I want to take them?
Yeah, where would you?
Casey Wellborn was another tragic loss of talent. I mean, you could just meet her and was an extraordinarily talented individual, somebody that you meet and you say, this woman can be superintendent of the Detroit Public Schools someday. And I don't know what it is about our system that causes people with that kind of talent to go for short-term money instead of the community. But we've got deeper questions, and my plan is out there. Hopefully it's going to be adopted by the governor and the legislature. I think it's moving closer. But I'm very much aligned with Tanya Allen and Wendell Anthony and the Education Coalition, which is we believe the schools need to be returned back to elected leadership, that the EAA has not succeeded. It needs to be rolled back into the Detroit Public Schools and run as one system. Then what we proposed is a Detroit Education Commission that's appointed by the mayor with local control, that sets a single standard of schools for all schools, public and charter, because half of our schools in Detroit now are charter. So you can't talk about education without talking about the charter schools as well. Let's have a single standard that says if you want to open in this neighborhood, you come in and apply. We don't have a situation we had a couple years ago where five schools opened in southwest Detroit at once and destabilized the whole area. Well, we've got other stretches of the city with no schools at all. Let's have a central authority that manages where those schools go. Let's get some transportation options. So if you're in the one-third of our households that don't have a car, you'll have at least four or five schools on a bus loop, and your child can have four or five choices of school because I believe in choice, whether they're Detroit Public School or charter schools. Let's grow the schools that are succeeding. Let's give resources to those who aren't failing, and if they can't make it, close them down and move people to schools that are performing better. But I want to put choice in the hands of all parents between transportation and choices between public and charter, and whether right now that initiative is being fought more by the charter community than anybody else, because the charter schools right now are free to pretty much open and close as they please, and I think we need to have a single standard of accountability.
And Mr. Mayor, just, you know, I always think about this when I read these stories, and even hearing you talk right now. If I'm a DPS parent and I have a child in junior high, let's say seventh or eighth grade, I mean, is my child going to experience some better education system before they graduate from high school? I mean, as we speak, these kids are just moving through the system.
There are parents who have succeeded in getting their children into good schools, some public, some charter, and there are parents who haven't. And the reality is, and we've got kids who have switched schools three or four times in three or four years trying to find a better situation. The solution to this thing is going to be to increase the number of quality schools so that parents have more positive choices. But right now, this issue has been bottled up in the legislature for 12 months, I just don't know where it stands. As I say, right now the mayor is not engaged in the system, but I've supported the Education Coalition. We're going to push hard to get this bill through.
Well, I don't want to belabor that since Marie already gave me a shout out for the column about Kenyatta, which was heartbreaking. But I do just want to ask a quick question. It has to do with the legislature adjourning last week without doing anything,
right,
which means we're going to start 2016 with parents and kids in limbo. Have you had any discussions with anybody about, you know, how urgent or they need to have it in place by a certain time? Or is there sort of a drop-dead date where there won't be time to make any changes for the new school year?
You know, I can't tell you how many meetings I've had. I've had legislators to my house for dinner.
Phone calls.
The Detroit legislators, I think, are largely aligned on this. But you have so many different issues. One is, you know, there's a $700 million debt in the Detroit Public Schools that the state has run up since Jennifer Granholm appointed an emergency manager in 2009. Everybody, I think, now realizes that legally that obligation is the obligation of the state. The state took over the system. The state ran up the debt. Mm-hmm. The state guaranteed the debt. The state is going to have to take responsibility for the debt. But even though they know it's true, that's not an easy thing for outstate legislators to vote for. Then when you start to put on top of that, the charter is saying, hey, we don't want some education commission telling us when we can open and close our schools. And now you got charter operators shooting at legislators. And there's a point at which the legislators are just not willing to deal with the issue. And you know, the governor is going to have to find a solution here, because the financial condition of the Detroit Public Schools under state management is getting worse and worse. And if they don't solve it in the legislature very soon, they're going to have no financial choice except bankruptcy. They're going to run out of money the way they're operating. And so hopefully they take it up soon.
Conversation you care about here on In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle. Stay with us. Mayor, wait for us. We'll be right back.
In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle is sponsored by the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. Once again, here's Rochelle Riley.
Why don't we move away from schools for a while? Because, you know, I could talk about that all day long and talk a little bit about the neighborhoods. I know Marie asked one question about that, but I'm very interested in sort of whether there's a plan to do for downtown and midtown, but district by district, as you're having discussions with people and you've been to every district and everybody knows you. But as you go to different places, like, okay, District 4, you know, is out there doing all that great stuff with Chandler Park. Is there a master plan that the city is helping to guide or to be a part of to say, well, this is what your, you know, future should look like? And I know you spend a lot of time in District 1 and they've got the store coming and a lot of stuff is happening there. But are there discussions district by district about what ought to happen that the city can help with?
Oh, absolutely. And we have a new planning director, Maurice Cox, who we hired out of New Orleans, who's doing just a phenomenal job. He's been here about a year, and he is absolutely developing, in partnership with the city council members and the community groups, strategies for each district. So we've got a strategy for the East Warren area over near Morningside in East English Village. We've got a strategy for the Jefferson Chalmers area along the riverfront. We've got a strategy for the university area between UAD Mercy and Mary Grove over on McNichols on the west side. We've got strategies for Southwest Detroit along Verner. And once a week, I still do a house party in somebody's living room. And I move to a different district every single week, just talking to people about what are your aspirations for your neighborhoods. And there are so many foundations who are chipping in different ways in different neighborhoods. And it's exciting. You go out and all of a sudden you see a couple more stores in another area. And that's the way that it's just going to have to continue to grow. The areas that have the strongest neighborhood groups are tending to attract the most neighbors. And then when that happens, the people who own the storefronts start to fix up their vacant storefronts, and you start to see businesses move in. And we've got strategies for every corner of the city.
Well, I do have to ask one quick little follow, because I talk regularly with folks, not just the council members, but, you know, the community folks and the people who are doing great work, you know, in every district, 1 through 7, except 2. George Cushenberry's district. So that's literally, you know, the neighborhood where, and you know, because you and your wife lived there before
right.
You moved to the Manoogian, gorgeous house. And so, you know, there's just a sense of, okay, everybody seems to be doing a lot. And District 2, quite frankly, is the district that has people who have the wherewithal to you know, be really involved. Should we have any concern about District 2?
Well, again, you walk down Livernois now between 7 and 8 Mile, mm-hmm. and you'll see the lighting that is not only over the road, but also there's the second light over the sidewalk.
The sidewalk, right, yeah.
Right. And so we've now made the whole retail corridor along Livernois open, particularly in wintertime. These stores were closing as soon as it was dark. Now their sidewalks are lit, and you're starting to see excitement there. These are the kinds of things that we are doing area by area. I just did a pitch this week to a major national foundation to make a significant investment in District 2 in the area between Livernois and Wyoming south of McNichols, mm-hmm. essentially linking the Mary Grove and UAD Mercy communities. We're trying to get faculty and staff from the universities to move into those neighborhoods, much like Wayne State and DMC and Henry Ford did in Midtown about 10 years ago. And a couple of days ago, I was out with the folks at Sinai Grace Hospital over on, you know, Outer Drive and Schaefer about could we do a live in the neighborhood program there. And all of those are District 2. And so we do have good economic anchors in District 2. And we're very much focusing on translating those economic anchors into neighborhood revitalization.
What a great idea.
That's outstanding. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit. When we talked about education, of course, you reminded us that you do not have any control over DPS. But let's talk about something you do have some control over, and that is the Detroit Police Department. Let's
right.
talk a little bit about crime. You just got the ribbon on the new 5th Precinct. Detroit police are getting raises. I know you reminded the reporters this week about that. So tell us about crime within the neighborhood. I mean, there are still, I know, way too many carjackings that we report, hit
right.
and runs that I report
right.
them every day.
Right.
What is in the coming year here, some of the things that you'd like to spearhead to get this under control?
Well, the city remains much too violent. It's interesting. The economic crimes are down double digits this year, car thefts and robberies. And I think that has to do with the fact that the unemployment rate is down and more people are working. What hasn't gone down significantly is the violence.
Mm-hmm.
And the violence, the great majority of it is groups beefing with each other. They may not be formal gangs, but they're groups who resolve their beefs with gunfire. And we've studied closely, Chief Craig, I think it's just doing a great job. We've studied closely what New York has done, where they had, you know, 4,000 murders in the early 90s. They're down to 400 today. They did it by chipping away every single year. What do? They put more cops on the street.
Mm-hmm.
They gave those cops technology data, so they were put in the areas of the highest crimes. They supported them with the best equipment. We're starting to head down those roads. I have 200 vacant police positions where there's money in the budget today, and at $31,000, we were not able to fill the positions.
Wow.
Now we've raised that starting pay to $36,000. I think it's going to make a difference, and we're going to get the extra 200 cops on the street over the next year or so. We have now opened the new 5th precinct, which makes the east side much more responsive. Next year, we're going to open a new 8th precinct out by the Myers mm-hmm. at Grand River and Lasser.
Yeah.
These are precincts that never should have been closed. And next year, we're also going to start to roll out body cameras on officers. We're going to be one of the first major departments in America to fully deploy body cameras, because nothing builds trust between the community and the police than the ability on a he said, she said story to be able to just look at the video and see what happened. And if the officer did something wrong, that needs to be handled accordingly. But if the officer is being falsely accused, it's important for the community to see that as well. And whereas in many parts of the country, the police officers have fought the body cameras, the Detroit Police Officers Union embraced them from day one. And I just think it's a very healthy sign. But we got a long way to go on the violence, but we are investing heavily in the police department, and I'm spending a lot of time with Chief Craig in 2016, and we're going to get this violence under control.
Well, Mr. Mayor, it's great to get ahead of the problem. So, you know, we haven't had a Freddie Gray situation mm-hmm. here, so to have the body cameras and to do all of that before there's a problem is fantastic. But there's another thing that Chief Craig suggested for people to do to get ahead of problems and to be better prepared, and we want to ask you about that because he was on the mix, and our listeners heard him say that, you know, Detroiters should arm themselves to make sure that they're able to protect themselves in some of those neighborhoods where, you know, criminals think that the neighborhoods belong to them. We're not going to ask you, you know, yay or nay to vote on everything Chief Craig has said or done, but on something in that particular, are you in lockstep with him on that idea?
You know, people in this state have a right, certainly everybody has a right to have a gun in your house for your protection. You have a right to carry concealed with the appropriate permit, and everybody needs to make their own judgment as to whether you are safer with a gun in your house or not, or whether you are safer carrying or not. I don't think it's my place to tell people whether to carry or not to carry, but I'd like to be to the point where we have law enforcement strategies that you don't have to rely on carrying. And, you know, in January, you're going to see the full rollout of the so-called Green Light Project at the first 9 gas stations that we're doing that are going to have high-resolution color cameras, bright lighting, real-time monitoring at police headquarters. And these gas stations will be marked by bright green lights that let people know that the police headquarters is monitoring this on a real-time basis. We're going to create the first 9 zones of safety for people in this town who may not feel comfortable pumping gas at night. And then we're going to expand from there to fast food restaurants, Coney's, party stores.
Wow.
And I want to use technology to make people safer. It doesn't mean that you could never get held up at a gas station, but criminals tend to make risk-reward decisions. And when you know you're going to be caught on a high-resolution camera, and here's what's going to happen. If you hold somebody up at one of these green light gas stations, the officer at police headquarters will immediately capture the image of the perpetrator in the car, send it out to the laptops of the patrol cars in that precinct so that they could immediately be on the lookout for them. And so can we create zones of safety at these businesses? And if we do, could we spread it over the next couple of years to hundreds of businesses? And so I'm trying to create an approach where if you want to carry a gun, that's your right. But I'd like you to be safe enough that you don't feel you have to.
In the Mix with Marie and Rochelle.
Mayor Duggan here. We want to spread some love here for the city of Detroit because, of course, there's a lot of great things happening. And let's talk a little bit about Detroit's image. Just this past week, I did a story about Detroit pizza. There's a place in New York City that's going to start serving Detroit pizza. They shipped in a bunch of Detroit pizzas, and they're going to be starting to serve Detroit pizzas there under that name, which I found very interesting. But to me, the whole story was really about Detroit's image outside of the boundaries here of the city and what we're being perceived as. I have a daughter who works in New York City. She's constantly being asked, oh, wow, you're from Detroit. Tell me about Detroit. And that was never the experience just a few years ago. You've got to be happy to hear this image improvement that we've had around the city, around the country, and frankly, around the world for the city of Detroit.
I hear it from people every day who travel. You know, there and you know, people were 4 or 5 years ago. You say, "Where are you from?" And they would say, "You know, Birmingham or Troy or whatever." They didn't want to say Detroit.
Right, right.
So people say, "Oh my God, I'm so feel so bad for you for the bankruptcy. I feel so bad your mayor's in prison. I feel so bad." You just didn't even want to start the whole conversation, right?
And now
I'm hearing from people all over the place saying, "I love saying I'm from Detroit because people say, tell me what's happening." And so, you know, Dan Gilbert and Mike Illich and DT. And Blue Cross and so many people who have invested in the city have a huge part of it. I never thought I'd see the day there's a 6-month wait list for any apartment in downtown or midtown Detroit. It was just 3 or 4 years ago. There was a lot of vacancies. And so we are a place now where I think people see as a city of dreams and people want to come to. And, you know, my job is to make sure the lights are on and the buses are running and you're safe and you can get your business permits and you want to be here. And so hopefully this trend will continue. But there's no doubt people are much more proud traveling around the country saying they're from Detroit.
That is absolutely true. And that brings us to sort of this last futuristic look, because, you know, so many of us are holding our breath while we wait to see what Dan Gilbert is going to do with the old Hudson site. And there's lots of other things going on. There's $1 billion worth of bricks happening. But what's the next big thing for Detroit? Because even though there are lots of things in the works, the Red Wings Arena with the five neighborhoods, and I know you're looking beyond that. What is the next big thing in your view?
Well, there certainly will be some major construction projects, and that's really important because by the end of 2017, the Red Wings Arena project will be done, and we're going to, you know, need work for folks, and I think there's going to be far more projects that replace it. Probably the thing I'm most excited about is we're talking to the Federal Housing and Urban Development Department, HUD, about a program where they would commit 1,500 subsidized housing units, so units where you as a landlord would get paid $900 a month, and the person living there might pay $300 or $500 or $700 depending on their income. Except instead of creating a high rise like you had at the Jeffries or Brewster's project, we're going to take 1,500 vacant houses in neighborhoods and renovate them, and take people from substandard homes in some of these houses, in some of these neighbors with only one or two houses on a block, and move them into a higher quality home. And so if we can actually add, and I'm confident we will, 1,500 quality, affordable houses in vacant homes in these neighborhoods, I think it's going to continue to bring the property values in the neighborhoods back. And that's probably the thing I'm most excited about for 2016.
And of course, Rochelle mentions Dan Gilbert, but I always wonder when I think of Dan Gilbert, and he certainly has done so many great things. And one of the things, of course, he has done is to help people believe in themselves and have the city of Detroit believe in itself once again. But who is the next Dan Gilbert, Mr. Mayor?
I think the next Dan Gilbert is Regina Gaines, the African-American woman who opened the small wine shop. You go across the city right now, and there are lots of entrepreneurs opening lots of new businesses, and there's a sense that Detroit is a place that you can do it. And so the next phase is Dan Gilbert is going to, you know, he's going to buy huge buildings. There aren't many people who can do that.
Right,
but there are a lot of people who can start a business and hire 3 or 5 or 10 people and then grow from there and stay in our city. So I hope there's a whole lot of Regina Gaines out there, because that's how Detroit's going to come back.
So instead of being Motor City, are we now Entrepreneur City?
I think when kids in this city grow up thinking, I don't have to work for somebody else, I don't have to have a boss, I can start my own business, that's when the entrepreneur culture will have really taken hold. And I think we're seeing the early stages of it.
Well, I'm getting chills. I'm excited by that.
Mr. Mayor, thank you so much for joining us today on In the Mix, conversation you care about. We like to say that. This is certainly all the topics we definitely care about.
We are with you. We are working hard to let people know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And anytime you've got another big something happening, just give us a call and say, I'm coming on and getting in the mix to tell you what's happening.
All right. Well, Maria and Rochelle, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor.
Have a wonderful holiday, sir.
Thank you. You too.
Well, that was a great conversation with the mayor, who has had a fantastic year and looks like he wants to try and have an even better one in 2016.
It's always a great conversation with the mayor. We're very grateful that he was able to join us here on In the Mix with Maria and Rochelle. We hope you, our listeners, have a wonderful Christmas holiday, however you choose and however your faith traditions have you celebrating that.
And be sure and visit us on Facebook.com, In the Mix WJR, or follow us on Twitter at In the Mix WJR. We'll have some gems for you, and have a happy, happy new year.
Bye.